Movie Mavericks.
The Movie Mavericks Podcast.
Movie Mavericks, speaking of fucking long, uncut European cocks.
The Movie Mavericks Podcast.
Now for your hosts, Jason and Trevor.
I can't wait.
Hey now, everybody, welcome to episode 301 of the Movie Mavericks Podcast. I'm Trevor Anderson. Send you over to Jason Rugard. He's got a rundown for us.
Yeah, on the first episode in the 300s, we are going to be talking about Dwayne Johnson joining the Robert Ludlum universe. Shane Black's talking Lethal Weapon 5. Guillermo del Toro went on a love letter rampage to John Carpenter yesterday. We'll get into that, as well as reviews for Neighbors 2, Gods of Egypt, 999, The Night Before, and trailers for Star Trek 3, Assassin's Creed, Pop Star, Billy Lynn's Long Halftime Walk, and Hell or High Water. We got a packed show today, guys. Stay with us. It's going to be a long one, but we're going to get through it very smoothly, like we always do, right? Glossy.
If you say so.
Yeah. We talked last week a little bit of trivia, Schwarzenegger trivia, and you got it right on the head with Junior there. And you maybe want to go back and test your knowledge a little bit. And this is
really
because Kindergarten 2 dropped this week on Netflix. Did you watch it, the one with Ulf? No,
I didn't even know it was on there.
Yeah, they quietly dumped that one on to Netflix.
Well, Dolph
Netflix.
Did come out and say that he got Schwarzenegger's approval for it, so...
Oh, well, I'm sure that was...
Which I don't know why the fuck you would need.
And by the way, imagine that?
Oh, please. Schwarzenegger is such a whore. At this point, he gives his seal of approval to any fucking thing.
I remember when Schwarzenegger assured me that Terminator 4 was going to be great.
Oh, yeah. He'll assure you for any fucking movie. He doesn't give a shit.
Even Genesis, Terminator 5. It's going to be fantastic.
He's a real politician.
He really is. Can you imagine that, though, on the set of like, Expendables 3? Dolph's like, hey, can I talk to you real quick? Can I ask you your blessing on something here? Yeah. You fucking idiot, of course. this is another trivia question regarding that franchise. Now, there was supposed to be a Kindergarten Cop 2 way back in 1993. It was reworked and came out under a different title. It was a modest hit, an action comedy, 1993. Do you know the title?
Was it a Schwarzenegger movie?
No. It started.
No, so it's a different, that's something else.
Yeah, but it was released. It was Universal Pictures release.
A Universal Pictures release? I have no idea.
It is the Burt Reynolds star, Cop and a Half. Can you believe that? That was originally intended as Kindergarten Cop 2.
Yeah, I guess I could believe that, actually.
Right? Doesn't that make a little bit more sense in a way?
I guess. I mean, I don't know, cops and kids, you know, I'm done.
That was a very, very bad
movie. I mean,
somehow that movie made like $60 million in adjusted monies.
Oh, I remember when that movie came out. It was wildly popular. I mean, Kindergarten Cop is what we're talking about, right?
Cop and a Half.
Cop and a Half, good
yeah,
lord.
Cop and a Half, yeah.
That one was good. People like that. I'd never seen it.
It wasn't good. But people watched it,
yeah. I don't know. I'm surprised Kindergarten Cop made as much money as it did. It's just, I mean, have you seen Kindergarten Cop lately?
I caught a few minutes of it on TBS or one
it's,
of those.
The comedy part of it that you remember everyone reciting those lines, you know, our mom says our dad's a sex machine, whatever the fucking, all the stupid things, all that stuff is so bad in that movie. And the action stuff is like mediocre at best. It's really not a very good movie.
I just caught the last little part where the kids climb in the tower and I thought, God, there was a lot of 90s movies that ended up with like people climbing the towers, like Ricochet and that. And
either that or on rooftops, you know. Yeah. You know, yes, they like to be up high at the end of action movies in the 90s.
Even the Batman. Why are we climbing? Like, what are we getting towards here? Just fall?
No, yeah. We have to be up high. That's how you.
I did that. They fell in
that's
the
how
dish.
You do that. Yeah, they did in Cable Guy too. Yeah.
Right,
that
well,
was a 90s thing.
Go back and watch Cop and a Half, and if you think Kindergarten Cop is a little
no,
stiff.
I don't need to revisit starched. Or see it for the first time. No, I'm good.
Well, Dwayne Johnson, if you don't keep up with this guy on social media, you're missing out, because this guy's got a very entertaining social media following. And he is listed that he will be doing a project with Shane Black in 2017 that some are speculating might have something to do with the Predator reboot that Black has been talking about. Or is going to be the Doc Savage franchise that Black's been talking about since the 80s.
I mean, that's what I heard was Doc Savage, but
before all this
knows.
Happens.
You know, Dwayne Johnson's on a couple things, isn't he?
Well, he's on HGH, he's on testosterone, he's on...
he may be on estrogen. No. I mean, he's attached to a few movies at this point. He's kind of somehow spun himself into... the next movie star without really doing much of anything.
On the shoulders of Fast and Furious and G.I. Joe's franchise, he's kind of come in and revitalized a couple of things. And honestly, like now he's like made arguably one of the biggest movie stars in the world, if not internationally.
But he hasn't done anything yet, right? He's done very little things. I mean, I agree with you. Fast and Furious is probably really the thing that is the breakout. It's really not that good, but I'm to say that he's, you know, that's something that you would look at and say, oh yes, that's him. You know, it's an ensemble movie. But based on that alone, he's become very wanted. I'll say that.
He's very
now, oddly enough, even after Hercules, you know, didn't do so well. And, you talk about G.I. Joe really not doing so well in the end. You know, he's been involved with a lot of stuff, that really hasn't done very well. So it's surprising, but he has that personality. He's electric, you know?
Well, San Andreas was Warner Brothers' top grossing film worldwide.
There's that one, right.
I mean, that did a lot of business based on him. And so, you know, and you look at that and you go, it's a disaster film that he starred in. So just a good career move. And he's doing the comedy thing. Central Intelligence has a lot of heat going with Kevin Hart. He's attached himself to Jumanji once again with Kevin Hart. So
yeah,
a lot of things in the pipe. Somewhere in there, he's going to find the time, apparently, to do the new Robert Ludlum franchise they're trying to get off. in conjunction now, I think, with the Bourne films petering out, because I think everyone involved says this is the last Bourne film, like hell or high water, right?
Well, it has to be because Matt Damon's getting a bit old, right? He's kind of a bit long in the tooth there to play this role. Obviously, spinning it off didn't work.
Well, I think they're going to back and do a sequel there.
Are they still going to try to do that? I thought that, yeah. I mean, it's been so long.
That's what I thought.
And that's where I kind of feel like this Matt Damon thing was like, you know, squeeze the last drop of blood out of that rock.
What I heard was that they were still planning a Bourne Legacy sequel for like 18 or 19, you know, 2018 or 19.
They're constantly planning stuff. I mean, they will plan things up to right about when they're ready to shoot and then cancel it. You know, they've been doing that for quite a while now. And I don't know why, if it has something to do with PR, the way PR works nowadays in the internet, you know, they will not cancel things until like right up to the very last minute.
Maybe it's a testing device too, to gauge fan interaction and you know, retweets.
That's true. Like, yeah. Yeah, it could be that as well.
But Dwayne Johnson will be doing the Janssen directive, which is, you know, it's basically his version, Ludlum's side character, his Bourne. I didn't read these. I barely read the Ludlum ones. I read the Ludlum books, like the first two, and they had nothing to do with the actual movies that were made with Damon. I said, fuck that. I didn't read the rest of them. Honestly, the Bourne Supremacy has nothing to do with the Bourne Supremacy movie.
Yeah, that happens.
Title, and that is.
Yeah.
Let's talk about this Guillermo del Toro tweet storm that happened the other day.
Del Toro is so weird.
I like Del Toro though.
I really like him as a personality and whatnot. I just don't. I'm not sold on his style of filmmaking anymore. I liked him early on. His recent work, I think, is just complete trash.
I wouldn't say complete trash. I would be a little harsh.
I don't think so.
There was elements of Crimson Peak that we both liked.
Was there?
Yes, there were. You said it on you. I know.
I'd have
I
to
did.
Go back and listen to that. I don't know.
Yes, you liked elements of
elements
it.
Elements are you know, bullshit in the grand scheme of things. The movie itself was crap, you know. And we're talking full on story wise, right? The thing was a huge piece of crap, you know.
He went back and
I don't know.
Watched a look. It looks like he had like a triple feature of Carpenter films and just really just got on his hands and knees and just praised Carpenter.
I mean, the only thing I will say about this is, I wish that we weren't talking about movies like The Thing or The Fog, because it's kind of like, well, that's all. Even though I'm really not a fan of The Fog, it's an obvious one to go to. Like, let's dig a little bit deeper. You know, I like the Assault on Precinct 13 mention, but there's so many other movies. I mean, you're talking about a guy who made a lot of movies that weren't liked when they came out. There's so many more than those. Come on.
I was disappointed he didn't acknowledge even some of the, I think, seminal ones. Like, why aren't we talking Prince of Darkness, which I think is obviously the most overlooked one, I'll say over and over. Obviously, Escape from New York. Where is the mention of that in
there?
That's
what I mean. Yeah, there's a lot of movies in there that weren't. I felt a bit easy and very horror oriented, which coming from Del Toro is not unexpected, but. You know, come on.
The best part of that whole interaction, I thought, because he was saying a lot of things that are obviously, it's almost like, no shit. You know what I mean? Anybody in the know.
Right.
He did say a couple of things that were very poignant. One was the fact that there is I can't fucking speak apparently anymore on the radio, but
you're trying to say like Del Toro, it's not genre.
Yeah, exactly. Guillermo.
It's Stop trying to talk like a Spaniard.
Exactly. Banderos has left the room.
No.
It's genre inequality. He's saying basically that horror films don't get the respect that they should. And there is a truth to that in a certain degree. But sure. He also said a great story about him saying, you know, people love these films now and this and that. And Carpenter, you know, I can just imagine Carpenter saying, because I've seen a lot of interviews with the guy saying, how the fuck does that help me now? You know, it's like, yeah. I got shit on back in the day.
But that's Carpenter, right? I mean, Carpenter is, as he puts it, you know, a tough guy. He's not, he's just a tough, he's like a rough soul, you know, he's just the kind of guy, even in his old age, he looks like just the kind of guy that would, if you push him the wrong way, you know, he'd beat the shit out of you or something. You know, he just doesn't give a fuck.
He vaguely reminds me of John McTiernan. If you've ever watched an interview with McTiernan, they have the same kind of, they don't suffer fools well.
I agree as well.
They're very crotchety. They don't give a shit
That's
about
why I like
things.
McTiernan so well. I also like his style of directing and Carpenter's as well, where they just fucking, you go out and you do it.
It's sparse, but it's very, it's very professional. You know, they get the shots.
It's well thought out, really, is what it is.
Are you excited to see The Nice Guys? I can't wait to see it.
I am, but I don't know. I hope Shane Black. I hope Shane Blank. Oh my God! Now you've given it to me.
It's over there now.
I don't know what's going on here.
Banderas is in your house now.
I hope a Shane Black. He's so sexy. No.
Shane Negro.
Yeah, right. Shaney Blackie. I hope he delivers. You know, I obviously, you know, his big comeback. With Downey Jr. obviously helping out quite a bit what the hell was that called?
What was Kiss Kiss? Was
Kiss Kiss Bang Bang, thank you.
It was him helping Downey, and then Downey helped him with
but,
that.
Downey was so good in that movie. You know, they kind of helped each other, really. I mean, that movie, even people who didn't know Shane Black liked that movie because of Robert Downey Jr., and, you know, and a lot of the other actors and stuff in it. But I mean, so well written, so great. But he's kind of like, you mentioned Iron Man 3, I mean, oh no, you know, I mean, I like Shane Black, I like the way your mind works, but you know, I don't know, sometimes people like this come up with ideas that sound cooler maybe than they are if they were actually real.
You know, the best thing about a Shane Black movie coming out, I think, is the press junkets and all the shit that he says, because the guy is unfiltered. He really is one of like the Hollywood Mavericks of the 80s. You know, one of the rock star screenwriters that has hung on. I mean, Joe Esterhaas is gone. A lot of those, you know, Max Landis now, there's a lot of he's getting $4 million a script for this and $2 million for that. And that's just questionable money spending by studios at that point. But this guy was getting it back. You know, $2.5 million, $3 million for a script back in the late 80s, translated now, it's just, it's unbelievable the kind of money this guy was getting for the stuff. And he did write.
He's already spent it.
No, he's what? Yeah, he blew that in the 90s. He didn't have writer's block. Let's not forget. He had 7 years where he had writer's block. Yeah. And for him to get past that and now, but he didn't, he was asked about Lethal Weapon 5, you know, was his involvement. And his involvement with Lethal Weapon franchise is very, it's misinformed. He really wrote a first draft that had a story, but at the end, the two guys died. So they changed the end, obviously, brought in a co-writer, and then just used his character. So he got characters created by credit, but he had nothing to do with the films outside of the first draft of the first film. So somebody asked him his thoughts on part five, and he said that he wrote a 60-page treatment that he thought was a good movie, and he had basically, it was an older version or a current version of Mel Gibson and Danny Glover, and they were going to be in New York battling these Blackwater experts. These guys were smuggling antiquities to Afghanistan. And they were going to have a younger character with them. I think Jai Courtney automatically, right? And
obviously.
He said, though, that every time he saw one of these movies and they put the young guy in there, it was a counterpoint. They pushed the old guys aside. It was really about the young guys. He said he wasn't going to do that in his version of it. Probably why the script didn't get made, amongst other reasons. I mean, Gibson's pretty
amongst
much blacklisted.
Reasons, did anyone ask for it?
Right. But I mean, is he not describing, basically, though, Die Hard, A Good Day to Die Hard?
Well, he's describing many movies, right? Indiana Jones 4. I mean,
what he's discussing basically in his treatment,
not in the sense of the young guy stuff, but in the sense of,
I just thought all of it. In fact, I thought that the pushing the older guy. I mean, Indiana Jones 4, I think, has more Harrison Ford doing shit than Bruce Willis being central to A Good Day to Die Hard. I thought that was terrible.
Yeah, maybe a little bit, but I mean, it's the same idea, right? They're looking to expand the franchise and keep it alive beyond that. He's basically saying he's not interested in doing that, which is the right way to look at things, but that doesn't mean that doesn't work. it just means that if you go for the money grab, you know, it's not going to be as good as if you are truly artistically inspired, right? To make something.
He says he wrote the dream with a guy named Chuck. I want to know who Chuck is.
Chuck. It's from Chuck and Buck.
Seriously, I want to know who this guy Chuck is, because I want to know how much input he had in Shane Black.
That's his friend, in quotation marks, right?
The story is that Shane Black friend. Was living in a house with Fred Deckard, who wrote and directed a lot of films, and Monster Squad included, and a couple other guys, and they were friends with Frank Miller, and there's all these guys, and they said that they would – it's kind of like a crazy writer's and filmmaker's house he was living at. He said it wouldn't be uncommon for his friends to be staging fights on the lawn at 3 a.m. and lighting and filming them and whatnot. And he had wrote a treatment for Lethal Weapon and thought it was shit and threw it in the garbage, and his buddy pulled it out, read it, and sent it in, and that's how he got his first interview. It's pretty interesting story that Shane Black has and the roller coaster he's had in Hollywood. He looks like Liev Schreiber to me. Have you seen pictures of him? Do you get that vibe?
Kind of. Not really, but yeah. Liev Schreiber's a much bigger man than he is. But
I want to see Liev Schreiber when they do the Shane Black docudrama.
You want him to be in it? He's good. I like him, so that'll be fine with me.
He's got a great voice. He does those boxing documentaries on HBO 24/7. His voice is meant for documentaries.
Yeah, he can portray it. I don't know if he's a tough guy in real life, but he can portray one pretty well.
Yeah. All right, let's take a quick break, and we'll come back with reviews of 8 current films.
This podcast is a proud member of the Lamb Podcasting Network. Find the network at largeassmovieblogs.com.
Hey, Nolan, look what everybody is saying about the Lair of the Unwanted.
I know. Jess and Rachel at Real Insights said, the Lair is our number one favorite podcast.
Yeah. And Nick Job of Demented Podcast said, I look forward to every episode of the Lair.
You know, Dylan Fields of the Lambcast says, I'm planning to get a Lair of the Unwanted tattoo across my face. I love it so much.
Yeah, and Mad Hatter of MatineeCast said, I fucking love this podcast. I would die for it.
Yeah, Scott and Whitney at Frankly My Dear said, we got married thanks to Lair of the Unwanted.
Kai of the MILFcast said, dude, I'm speechless. Check out the almost Lammy-nominated podcast about the best of the worst movies that's out there. Come see what the fuss is all about. Check out The Lair of the Unwanted on iTunes.
You know, we should get married on one of these episodes.
You know, when people swear with an East Coast accent, it always just sounds better. Is it just me?
Oh, no, it's just you.
I don't know what it is. Fuck it.
No, it does. It does. It just sounds right.
Yeah, you know what I mean? If you've been to the East Coast, you know what I mean? It just sounds right,
yeah.
And no disrespect.
Yeah, it's true. And you like it more, you know? It's like if someone's cursing at you like that, you're just like, yeah, it's natural language. I got it.
Yeah, I don't have to take offense to it. It's just manner speaking. Well, I saw Neighbors 2 this weekend, which underperformed at the box office greatly. I mean, going into the weekend, they were projecting possibly $40
million. Crazy. Yeah, flip-flop between this and Angry Birds. I mean, very weird. So, but you know why.
I thought this movie was awful. I got to be honest. I was disappointed.
Almost went and saw it.
It's not worth your trip to the theater. And you know me, I'm always trying to tell you to go see something at the theater.
I thought the trailers were so good, though.
The trailers have a lot of things that aren't in this movie.
Really?
There are sequences, you know, one or two things I noticed. There was a good joke in the Red Band trailer that we saw when he was having sex with his wife and she was doing the chant and she was spelling anal and she said, never, that's not in this film. When the girl flies through the window and she's flipping him off in slow motion, that's cut out. She just flies through the window. This is an extremely sloppy movie. It's a hard R still.
Okay.
Let me tell you what. I think that Chloe Moretz is such a little cutie and a good actress on top of it.
She's great.
Embarrassing in this movie. She embarrasses herself two or three times and how bad the acting. The worst part about this is that it's directed by Nicholas Stoller, who did a great job. We're forgetting Sarah Marshall. In a number of other films, but he leaves his fucking actors out to dry.
Really? Because that's not – I mean, the word on the street is that they had a massive amount of woman input into this movie, right? Including all the actresses on set and everything to round this out to be less of just a guy's, you know, type hard R movie, which you'd get like, well, you know what, you know exactly what I'm talking about, right? I think everyone does. So that doesn't either work here or they just didn't actually take any of that input. I mean, what? Does it feel like that at all?
It's not funny. First of all, it's not funny. It's sloppy. The filmmaking in this is extremely sloppy, man. This thing is patched together. It's all over the fucking place. Like, It's first of all, there are moments in here when characters get their cell phones stolen. You know, people are breaking into their house and stealing phones behind their back, and you're like, give me a fucking break. We've now gone so absurd that you wouldn't know that somebody was doing this to you, and they change numbers, and they, you know, it's a sequence that is really kind of mean to the Rogan and other characters, and they, you know, it doesn't do a good job in making the Moretz character appealing at all.
Yeah, because in the first Neighbors, they actually Efron. Bond with Efron. And this one, it kind of does feel like the sorority is going to be separate, right? There's no bonding with the sorority that happens ever?
No, and the Efron character is floundering around. In the first one, he was slightly endearing because he didn't know it was lying ahead of him. In this one, he's actually, you know, he's fucking lost.
He's
Nobody
failed.
Wants to hang with him. Yeah, he's like, he has no job. Nobody wants to hang out with him. He has no future.
Damn.
And it's like, you look at this and you go, this is it reminded me of The Hangover 2. And not the fact that it was that mean to its characters, but it's not nice to these people at all in any sort of humorous way. There's a couple of sight gags that work. The airbag thing still gets me. A couple of lines that Rogan delivers. And there's still some punch here with these characters. It's not a total waste, but on a disappointing scale, I was extremely – I walked out of that and just thought – you know, nobody liked it. You could feel the kind of the disappointment hush over the crowd about 20 minutes in when nothing has really happened and nobody's having a good time. And it's short, too, that like it's almost like they wrap things up kind of extremely quickly. You know, there's a clever gag at the end, but there's no need for a part three. This will die out extremely fast. I don't think this makes $50 million.
It's so – because I really thought this was not sequel ready, you know, the first movie.
But the
I thought it was a one-off thing. It really – that's what I'm saying. The trailer really – I thought, oh, shit, they did it. You know, they came up with this idea of putting the sorority in there. They brought back Zac Efron. They created this world where you can repeat, you know, where it works. So that's really unfortunate.
It does not work at all. Even some of the gags they recycle don't work. And it's not a good movie on any level. It's a bad comedy, and it's a season full of bad comedies. It's another year of bad comedies. So
that's
get
fine
because
it's going to be a good year of action movies. So
that's it is true. So let's move on.
Big action movies.
Killing Neighbors here. let's talk about what do you want to talk about here? You got a whole.
What
bunch.
Is really okay? I'm interested in what the hell you wrote as your other movie.
Oh, I actually meant Life on the Line here, but I
was going to say Life. I thought you were talking about the Lance Bass Line on the Line
on the
movie,
line?
Which is believable because Emmanuel Tricky is in it, and I thought, oh yeah,
I wouldn't
he's
that.
He's definitely.
I wouldn't watch that again. I saw it back in the day. I only watched it because I'm a Joey Fatone fan. Okay,
yeah, exactly.
Somewhere out there, Chris Kirkpatrick is crying. All right, so I watched Life on the Line, which is now the umpteenth straight-to-DVD John Travolta film. You didn't even know this one was coming, did you?
Oh.
Let me tell you about this fucking movie.
Oh, boy.
He is a guy who works on a large-scale grid, electrical grid, and they go up in storms and make sure that you get your power, and power don't go out in the south. You know
How
what I mean?
Old is he now? I mean, is he old enough? Is he too old to be doing this?
Too old to be doing this.
Should he be retired in this movie?
I'm just fucking amazed at the goddamn makeup in this movie. They got him with like some sort of like biker ponytail thing going on and a goatee that has like a rubber band.
Wait, are you
shit.
Sure you I'm weren't like, watching a Steven Seagal movie?
I know he's morphing slowly into it. And I was thinking, you know, half the fun of watching these Nicolas Cage and John Travolta B movies is just to see what kind of crazy like look, quote unquote, look that they're going to develop for these characters because there's nothing on
this
the page.
True,
for,
yeah.
I mean, they're just all over the fucking place. And I mean, Travolta's Travolta. He can actually still act, obviously. He's still got the chops to do things. He's just stuck in these movies. And Devon Sawa is in this. Remember this guy from Casper in Wild America?
No, but
You remember from the Final Destination movie.
I know
you?
Who you're talking about, but I don't really remember him.
Well, I looked at it. It starts, and there's like this quasi-documentary kind of feel to it. And I'm like, is that Anthony Michael Hall? He looks terrible.
It's Bill Gates.
It's Devon Sawa, who's about 10 years younger. It looks 20 years older. long story short, this is your typical disaster movie. It's almost like Ladder 49, but in the electrical grid world. I mean, these guys are stuck in a storm, and they're talking about what happened out there. And Travolta's this martyr of sorts, and it just – you want to – I mean, I almost kind of wanted to like it because I was like, oh, fuck, I'm watching it. I might as well get into it. Sharon Stone makes an appearance at one point. It's bizarre.
Of course she does.
It's bizarre.
I mean, that's actually – that's very believable. That's not bizarre at all.
The only thing about it was I was watching it and I just went – I should have watched the other shitty Travolta one, the I Am Rat that we were talking about last week. It's that one. He's out killing people. It's not so sanctimonious.
Yeah. Some people get away with doing these types of movies, but I guess we're too far beyond that at this point, right? I mean, Kevin Costner got lucky getting in there with Guardian, right?
I love The Guardian. That movie,
great movie, but I mean, he got lucky time wise, as far as having that be a big production.
You know? That could have been a straight to DVD.
Yeah.
Nowadays, you know, I'm glad you brought up Costner. I was watching randomly. Let's talk about a real strange movie here. I was watching Major League 3: Back to the Minors. Why? Because I like to kill 90 minutes of my life for no reason. It's just time suicide, I call it.
Perfect. Yeah.
And I hadn't seen it forever, and I'm watching it. And first of all, it's a trip to see like actors that you can, you know, you recognize another shit in there. They had like a guy from went on to be in Walker, Texas Ranger. Two guys went on to be in The Shield.
You're the only person recognizing people with bit parts in Walker, Texas Ranger, and The Shield. I know exactly what you mean though, but that is because I do the same thing. Yeah. I do the same thing. Well, the world is everything that you watch, right? So that's like, to you, like you watch a couple things and then the person shows up again. To everybody else, they see him. They don't know who the fuck it is.
Like, Judson Mills, what are you doing in this?
Yeah.
So I'm watching that movie that we just said, and I'm looking at Scott Bakula, and I'm watching what he's doing, and I'm thinking, why Kevin Costner and not Scott Bakula? You think Scott Bakula ever was like, I could do what he fucking does? I mean, they're pretty much got that same, like, kind of vibe and that down home, good old like American, you know, Americana type thing. And
yeah,
you feel me though?
No, you're right. They do. I mean, in Men of a Certain Age, Scott Bakula is very kind of that devil may care, like Costner attitude kind of comes out.
Yeah, just watching it, I'm thinking, man, this guy was like, probably all of his life was losing out fucking auditions to Kevin Costner. And the shit Costner probably didn't want to do, they threw to Bakula. Yeah, here, do Necessary Roughness. Do Lords of Illusion.
Yeah, well, I mean, except for, obviously, Enterprise, right? Which was given to him.
Yeah, that's what Michael Pereira wanted.
Guess, Kevin Sorbo was busy doing Andromeda, yeah. Yeah. At least Kevin Costner hasn't sank to those levels yet.
He dipped into
yeah,
that.
We need somebody.
Movie though, he did. He did that one, The New Daughter or something like that. Remember he had that
the
one
new
little.
Daughter. I don't know.
That was a horror film he did that like kind of like dipped into that straight to DVD category. And I was like, oh, here we go with Kevin Costner. But he pulled himself back out.
Yeah, he's been able to do some stuff. There, I mean, Michael Keaton's kind of in that same zone, you know. Michael Keaton's obviously having a resurgence at this point, but you know, been able to kind of zigzag his way around that stuff.
Yeah, he was doing some straight to DVD stuff for a while, Game 6 and things like that.
Yeah. I mean, but it was, you know, nobody noticed.
It was pretty artsy. It wasn't like I Am Wrath and Life on the Line.
Which right.
My review is don't watch Life on the Line, even if your life is on the line.
They'll watch On the Line instead.
Yeah, exactly. It's probably better to use your time. Or In the Mix, the Usher movie. That's fucking cinema. Another Emmanuel Shittery.
Yeah, she likes those kinds of movies.
Yeah, like she must have been like, fuck, I can only work with R&B stars. I want to know why you put three films on Vudu that were universally panned and critical bombs and commercial failures.
Because I'm just buying everything at this point.
Let's start from the top. Pride and Prejudice.
There's nothing
zombies.
Else to buy.
I mean, what the fuck, man?
Pride and Prejudice and Zombies. I actually really like this movie. I'm going to admit it. I'm a Pride and Prejudice fan.
You mean like you're a secret Jane Austen fan? No fucking shit. I can't believe you just admitted that on there.
No, it's
there's
not.
There's one of our listeners right now that has a tear coming out of their eye. They're like, I'm so proud of you.
Oh, right.
And you also like zombies, so I guess this is a perfect situation.
Right. No, that's not true. I've never read Pride and Prejudice. I don't like Jane Austen in general. But I did really, really like the Joe Wright movie Pride and Prejudice with Keira Knightley. Yeah, whatever. Yeah. All the other people. I thought it was a great movie, surprisingly. I really thought I wouldn't like it, and I loved it. And so I do know a little bit about Pride and Prejudice because I've seen that one Pride and Prejudice movie. So I'm.
So you're versed in your Austen.
I'm basically, basically I have a doctorate in Jane Austen. At this point.
Yeah, I saw Baz Luhrmann, Romeo and Juliet on the Shakespeare
story. Yeah. So I applied that knowledge to this movie, and I understand why this. It surprisingly it works, and I get why it works because they're very careful to keep the Pride and Prejudice stuff intact while adding or morphing just a little bit so that they can put the zombie stuff in there. So all the, a lot of the character interactions and stuff really are Pride and Prejudice interactions, you know, but with the zombie stuff being kind of on the peripheral. And so you get very differently staged interactions between people, but saying kind of like similar lines and things, and it works somehow. So I really did. I like this movie, surprisingly enough. And
I don't know if I'm ever going to actually take the time to look at this one.
Yeah, well, I mean, it doesn't really matter. It's not
compared to American, or I'm sorry, Abraham Lincoln, The Vampire Hunter.
Oh, that movie's terrible.
I liked that one though.
No. You're talking about the Asylum one.
I like that one too.
No, you liked American. You liked the.
No, I'm thinking of Dark Shadows. I'm sorry, I get those two mixed up all.
Yeah, Dark Shadows is good.
Dark Shadows, yeah, but this like doesn't. Same week.
Yeah, see, I would say Dark Shadows is better, but Dark Shadows is more Hollywood. This is really Pride and Prejudice and zombies, which to me worked, but could hurt it because it's Pride and Prejudice and zombies, right?
Which is obviously what so. You know. People didn't go see it, and it wasn't.
Yeah,
very well
I mean, it works so. As a book form because it's cool, and I get it. Like, I can see the idea and stuff, but this is really like I get why the Abraham Lincoln thing didn't work, or not the Asylum one, which you liked. A couple people liked that one was well written, but boring shit. But this stuff doesn't work. You know, putting these weird twists on things isn't enough. That it has to be done just the right way, and I thought this was done the right way, and I liked all the actors in it.
You caught up and finally saw The Night Before. Speaking of Seth Rogen,
I
you
did
know,
finally
guy,
see this. This is a movie
I gave
you
this
panned.
One. I didn't hate it. I give it a mid.
Really?
You said I gave it a mild.
I felt like you hated it.
I gave it a mild thumbs kind of down. I was on the all fence right. on it, and I gave it a mild non-recommendation.
I loved it.
Really?
You're
the second
did.
Person
I
that
really,
told me that this weekend.
I really loved it. Like this is a new holiday favorite for me.
Get the fuck
out. The acting was great. It was fucking hysterical. The entire movie was funny, I thought. Seth Rogen was just on point through the whole thing. I like Anthony Mackie. I actually thought he was we worked well in with this group. Obviously Joseph Gordon-Levitt you know is top of his game always. But I just the bits I thought were funny, and I liked these characters. These were guys that I wanted to hang out with. And even so, even when they went off on their separate ways, it kept the story moving, right? It had good bits even when they weren't together. So I did enjoy this movie.
I thought this one went on a little too long for me and got a little bit too wrapped up in its own thing. But I did love the Michael Shannon stuff. I thought he was fantastic playing.
He's great
in
it. He's almost, yeah. But as far as like other things go, he's damn near. You don't even know he's somebody else. I don't know what he is in this, but it's not. He's like, not, I don't know. Is this he hasn't played this type of role before, has he?
No, but he's playing, you know, that oddball like kind of character. He's playing almost himself, I thought, like in that what people perceive.
I mean, he really is playing this person who's just out of their mind, and he does it to a degree where the dude must be actually high, right? Or he's just a really good actor. Because he literally looks and acts like someone who's he's really high. Just like that, like a drug dealer. Like he's literally... Like, I don't know, maybe his best role yet, you know, which is sad to say it's in this fucking movie, but.
Well, great use of, you know, a lot of pop culture references in this movie. I love when they went and the Kanye stuff,
the
you
bits.
Know, and
I mean,
all that.
When Seth Rogen's getting the dick pics and stuff was hysterical.
I
damn near died, especially when
tell
he's
me
like.
You didn't know, though, who that James was, that you weren't.
Oh, yes,
that.
Of course. Okay. I knew, but that was, I thought that was a nice touch as well. You know, these guys are all together all the time. I've had to watch plenty of fucking movies where they pop up in each other's movies and shit. So at this point, you know, I just take it, you know, just let it happen.
I thought
because you know it's gonna.
This was at least a little bit better than The Interview for me.
Yeah, this is. I thought this was way better than The Interview. Yeah,
and so I thought it was good. But I just was a little bit, once again, a trailer that really sold me, and then I got in there and it wasn't quite the experience I was looking for. I thought it was a little bit heavy-handed with the story with Joseph Gordon-Levitt's backstory.
Yeah, I mean, I agree
about
with that
is
until it, I know. And that was the other thing about it was really the beginning kind of is a bit off-putting at first because you think, this is not the movie I signed up for. But then it does become that movie. So I was okay with that after that. And any movie that cast Jillian Bell is going to be a favorite of mine because I think she's absolutely hysterical.
She is pretty damn funny. All right, what about 999? This is the Casey Affleck heist film that came out this year, but looked like it was going to come out in 1992.
Yeah, this movie is just a confused fucking movie. Fantastic performances by Chiwetel Ejiofor, whatever his name is.
Wow, you did that well. I can't do that well.
Great in this.
You should not say Madea. Tyler Perry's Madea. You can say that.
Chiwetel Ejiofor? I don't know. Yeah. It's fucking, it's the weirdest name in the world.
Did you ask Siri how to say that?
Yeah, right? But he is so good, like, as an actor. I can't, like, you know, it must be the name that's holding him back, real honestly. He should be in more movies. He's fucking good.
I know. He's great. He's been great in everything.
Yes, but seriously good. Like, he like, really good. Casey Affleck obviously is good in this. Anthony Mackie's in this as well. He's good. Woody Harrelson, you know, is Woody Harrelson. I mean, Aaron Paul is okay.
Aaron Paul.
If you like Aaron Paul, he's in this.
What's the problem with the movie?
It is just a jumbled mess, to be honest with you. I mean, it opens with a bank robbery. Okay, that's all good. We have the storyline going, you know, working for the Russian mafia. Kate Winslet's running the Russian mafia for some reason.
All right, you've already lost all believability.
Gal Gadot is her sister, and Chewie.
Now we're
EG4. What's
next, they're on fucking Mars?
He is. He apparently was with good old Wonder Woman there, and they have a kid together, so he's kind of tied up in this Russian mafia nonsense. And so he's doing jobs for them. On his team are Anthony Mackie, who's a cop, Norman Reedus, who is also a cop, and then
Norman Reedus
other people.
Is not,
I mean,
like
Aaron,
a cop.
Aaron Paul.
I would not trust that man. If he pulled, he's like, I'm a cop. I'm like, fuck you. You ain't a cop. He sees my D. I don't trust you. You look like an asshole.
Yeah.
Is this not worth watching? I mean, was it worse than what was the other jumbled mess of an action film that we saw like this? I want to say shit.
There's been a lot. I mean, this is very obviously, you know, I say this is a 90s movie.
Worse than Sabotage, the Schwarzenegger one? That's what I was thinking of.
Oh, well, I mean, no, it's not as bad, but just because, you know, I mean, the storytelling in Sabotage is too artistic.
I thought the characters,
you know what I mean,
in Sabotage.
Yeah, that too. I mean, they're a little, I mean, Chiwetel is a good guy in this. Everyone else is, and Casey Affleck's good. Everyone else is pretty much, you know, an asshole.
Was this better or worse than Point Break?
I haven't seen Point Break yet.
Good. I'm glad. Clean
slate. But my guess is, I don't know. I mean, this is going to be less slick for sure. It's very 90s feeling. I mean, when they set off bombs, they use a burner phone, but it's a flip phone. For crying out loud. I mean, this movie is totally 90s to the nth degree. The cops hang out in a dive bar that is just
straight out of Copland.
Oh, no, it's ridiculous. It's the no cops would hang out in this bar. It's like a biker bar. It's just dirty, like, as fuck. And there are just women, you know, strippers and all this shit going on. You're just like, who? Like, who? What? Only dirty cops would hang out in this bar.
Yeah, it does
so
not
it's,
sound good.
It's a silly movie in the end. There is some sequences in the middle that are pretty good where they're breaching, they're clearing, they're going after some guy and they get to clear this apartment building. That was good action, you know. The bank robbery is good. It's the story overall is so disjointed and just very weird.
Well, speaking of silly films, and the last on the voodoo list here, the trifecta of shit that we got on this account is Gods of Egypt, a movie that I've actually had a little nagging want to see. But
me too.
It came and went so quickly that I never had a chance to. But you caught up with it. What's going on?
Yeah, I mean, it should be called Gods of Awful.
Really? I have a tolerance for these kind of movies, though. I really do.
So did I. And I watched the entire thing, and I was like, okay, that's fine, you know. But if we're going to talk to normal people here, it's fucking awful. This isn't us here. We have a high tolerance for this kind of shit. Believe me, I watched the whole thing. It truly is awful, you know, to a degree where it's just like, what the fuck is going on half the time? And it's Wachowski awful, you know. The world building that's going on here is just so silly. Like, and I'll give you the prime example. The big, well, first of all, the cool things are the gods are like big,
right,
like they're
yeah.
like they're big people and stuff. And so that's kind of cool, but it does lend to things where, you know, like hand someone a glass of wine, they have to double hand it because the gods are big, but the guy's like small. Oh, God. So it's like silly shit like that. You know what I mean? That's not good.
Well, how's the CG? How does it look?
The CG is good overall. There are some action sequences that obviously need some love. But again, I mean, Gerard Butler plays this god that takes over, and he, for whatever reason, has these giant beetles. And the way these are introduced is there's just, he's talking, and at some point there's just a giant beetle walking across the background. And then later on in the movie, he has these giant beetles as his horses, as a chariot, and so they can fly and take his chariot with him. It's shit like that that really just kind of like, it, like, who the fuck did this? Right? I mean, whoever made this had to be super high.
Extremely disappointing, because Alex Proyas, who directed it, did The Crow, did I, Robot, I tell you, Dark City. I mean, these are movies that are like seminal classics.
This is what I thought the whole movie. You see things, you say, oh, well, at least this is well directed. And then shit like that happens. And you go, good Lord, what the fuck was that? And then the next scene, you're like, okay, well, at least this is well directed. You know? And then something happens. You're like, what the fuck was that? That's the whole movie.
It's a Red Sonja moment you have in there. What the fuck is going on here?
Yeah, so it's just very weird, you know, and really ultimately not very good, I guess, in the sense that it's a pointless story. You know, I mean, at least in B movies and shitty stories nowadays, they try to make you have some sort of connection or get engrossed in it. There's really just nothing here in this at all. It's equal parts, you know, silly, like Jupiter Ascending type silliness, and you know, Prince of Persia. I mean, one of the characters in this, the mortal character, is basically a thief. Ooh, that's original, right? I mean, fuck.
Yeah,
it's real, real, just basic.
Like, I've already mentally tuned out when you say these things. It's like, yep, seen that. Yeah. I asked you if it was as good as or worse than the Hercules with Kellan Lutz, and you said, mm-hmm. Yeah, and seen it. I thought, perfect, because this is the same long line of these kind of movies. I've seen a lot of this kind of shit.
Yeah.
This one couldn't even get me riled up for because of the trailers that looked so awful. It looked like a combination.
Well, the trailers are exactly a good representation of this movie, you know, because they're confusing as fuck, and that's basically what this movie is confusing as fuck. Even though it's not hard to follow, it's just like, why, like, just weird shit happens. You're like, who decided this? You know, I will say the Beltrami score is great, as always.
Yeah, always.
But other than that, like, this is, if you like these kinds of silly, stupid movies like that, then, you know, it's okay. It's not like, like Jupiter Ascending, like, fucking hurts you, right, when you
watch
it. That's
insulting, yeah.
This movie isn't at that level, but it's definitely not, like, you can't really recommend this to people, you know?
Yeah, Jupiter Ascending is still on the high on the shit list of these kind of movies. All right, let's move on and let's get to our trailer addict portion of today's show.
Trailers can be wondrous things, giving us insight into the unseen movies of the future. But when they're bad, fire photon torpedoes. Shields up, red alert! Prepare for Trailer Addict.
Ooh, before we get into this, have you seen any of the new Ghostbuster trailers?
I have, and I'm actually liking
really?
It.
Really? Which ones have you seen? Did you see both the new ones?
No, I saw the new the television spot. And
oh, the TV
I,
spot.
Where she jumped and didn't, you know, landed on her back. And
okay, that's in the second trailer, yeah.
I've only seen the new cuts, but I thought they're doing a much better job of presenting this.
Oh, my God. Yeah, if you guys, I mean,
I didn't have a problem with the first one, though, to be clear. I really
didn't
have a problem.
We both loved the first one. Yeah. The more and more I see of this movie, the more and more I love it. But I mean that the second trailer to come out in the U.S. is very good, but the international trailer is really good.
I have to give that a watch.
But definitely give both those a watch. I'm loving this movie so far. I think the comedy is working, and obviously the casting I really like. So, which is surprising because I was totally. I think we were both kind of edging being against this from the beginning.
There's a couple things I like in the summertime. I like disaster invasion movies, you know, like mm-hmm. your Independence Day or San Andreas, yes. Things like that. I kind of expect that. I like special effects comedies, much like this, much like Pixels last year and
Men
things
in Black,
of that ilk.
Obviously, yeah.
And I like your goofy star driven comedies, you know, like your Sandler movies and stuff. So like or mm-hmm. your Knocked Up and things. So like those are summertime movies for me. Yeah. So when I see this fits perfectly into that mold for me. I can't wait to see this in July on a hot July evening. watching a, you know, a breezy comedy like this that's professionally done, that's it's exactly what you want. I don't want to think about it 2 hours later. I just want to enjoy it when it's happening.
I mean, McKinnon is killing it for me in all these trailers.
Kate McKinnon is the standout star of Saturday Night Live for the last 2 years. I've been telling people this for 2 years.
But there's no way, I mean, I agree with you, but and this movie is just further proof of that. It's unfortunate. I don't see any way for her to expand, you know? I don't think she's going to get the recognition she deserves for this either. But in the trailers anyways, she's the one that that has those off the cuff remarks and things, and just she's kind of in her own world, but she's like, she's not out of it, you know. She's very in tune. She's very on. I don't know.
There is
like
no
her.
Other cast member on Saturday Night Live in the last couple of years that cracks up fellow cast members more during sketches than her. And if you haven't seen her Justin Bieber impersonation, it looks just like it. Mannerisms down to a T, more so than even her Clinton impersonation. But let's move on and talk about Star Trek Beyond, which dropped its second trailer this week and announced that they're going to be releasing the film in an IMAX presentation during San Diego's Comic-Con in July before its theatrical presentation here in the States. I think this trailer is a big improvement over the little teaser I saw. I guess it was an international teaser they released previously.
No, it was a trailer.
Was it a full trailer? I thought the second one was a much, much, much improved.
This is more of a trailer. I don't think there's anything new in this, really, except for the bad guy.
Just presented a little bit better, I thought.
Really? I mean, I disagree. I like the other one as well. As far as a teaser goes, it's more than a teaser, really. The other one really is a trailer. This is trailer number two. I mean, you're right. They're two very different trailers, but I do like the teaser stuff that they do and then come out with a real trailer like this later. Both of these have gotten me onto this. I loved both of the other Star Trek movies. I know not a lot of people were a fan of the second one. I still liked it. I really love these characters and the casting. So I'm good on this. I think this looks great.
I am going to go back and rewatch Star Trek Into Darkness because I thought, once again, there's a sequel that was another come down. Not nearly on the level of Neighbors 2, but it was a come down for me in the realization of, oh, they couldn't, you know, bottle the lightning once again. But I think also there was so much buildup. If you go back 3 summers and all the hoopla, is it Khan? Is it not Khan? Who gives a shit in the end? The movie wasn't that great.
Yeah, I didn't
pay
attention to any of that. I just really like to revisit these character stuff. I also can't wait for the TV show to see if they can keep this, you know, momentum going. You know, obviously it's not going to be the same cast, but, you know, they should be able to, with this style, do something again, you know. And it's really all about character when it comes down to, like, Star Trek. And even Star Wars, you know, for as much as anyone wants to talk about those, you know, movies versus TV and stuff, all these sci-fi stuff is the world, you know, it is the characters. So if that doesn't work, you're fucked.
Of, you know, current political situations for Star Trek, they always use.
That as well. I mean, Star Trek was like that. I mean, Star Trek is very different than Star Wars in the sense that it's more of a modern day.
It's pulled from the headlines in a lot of ways.
Yeah, well, the structure of everything is very, you know, U.S., you know. Versus...
Well, it's a military. Really, it's a military drama. It's like a submarine drama in the 50s.
Exactly. Yeah, and I do like Justin Lin being at the helm here, and the whole. You heard about the lawsuit against the
fan film.
The fan film being dropped now, because Justin Lin and J.J. Abrams went. I guess Justin Lin really hated the idea that they were suing over this, and you know that's the right way to approach it. You know.
Yeah, studios have been so, so overprotective of their trademarks. You know, there was that story that we heard about a guy doing a really good 007 fan film back in, you know, 15 years ago. One of our teachers was telling us, if you recall. And the guy, you know, MGM went after the guy and just basically he spent all this money on this kind of thesis film and he couldn't show it to anybody. He didn't have the clear chain of title for any of the stuff that was used. And it really, in this day and age when there's so much shit on YouTube and people using unlicensed things all the time, what's the fucking difference? Really, they're just pushing your brand. They're just keeping Star Trek in the vernacular. I mean, people are looking at things and talking about it. You're building that world so that when you get an official... Are they saying that people aren't going to go out and watch the official release because of a fan film? That's why I never understood that argument, you know?
Yeah, well, I mean, the one thing about this I think that makes it different is that the fan film and a lot of fan films aren't looking to make a profit. You know, if this was for profit, that would be a different issue, I think, altogether. But it's not. You know, it's really for fans by fans. You know, right. It's to be freely shared. Here's something we're adding to the universe and whatnot. You know, and that's something that you should encourage and not push down. You know, albeit if it was, you know, Universal making a Star Trek movie, obviously wouldn't work, right? You'd sue the shit out of them.
Yeah, but look at a movie like Fanboys, which was done, you know, in part by Adam Goldberg, who now does the Goldberg's show. It's like there is talent that comes out of these things sometimes. You got, you know, I wonder what happened to the guy who did George Lucas in Love. Remember that guy? And they stuck him on like really shitty studio films like Sleepover and Prom, and he was never heard from again. It's fucked up. Be careful what you wish for, get in the studio system. All right, let's talk about Assassin's Creed, which is another film that is highly anticipated.
Controversy.
And I think this has a nice, nice looking trailer here. I don't know what the fuck's going on, but I
thought this was terrible.
It was like Aeon Flux terrible though, right?
No, I just thought, well,
it looked beautiful and terrible.
The kerfuffle here is obviously the Kanye West music. And everyone made a big deal about this, and I read about it before watching this trailer, and I got to agree, that music does not work with this trailer at all, and it just ruins it, really, for me.
I have no problem. I prefer that than you got the other stuff where the Transformers roam in a land of desolation.
No, I don't like that either, but I also don't like the superhero landing. You know, I mean, seriously, why are we doing this still? This movie looks terrible. It looks fucking terrible.
It looks pointless.
I don't understand the video game or the point of the video game, and I don't understand the point of the movie. But at least in the video game, it's interactive. You're doing something. In the movie, you're just going to sit there and watch someone relive memories and shit. It's fucking stupid. What are we doing?
It was very Prince of Persia reminiscent, was it not?
Yeah, well, and the video game is, to be fair, you know. But like I say, the video game's interactive. You have to do missions and shit. I mean, in video games, at that point, maybe, I mean, you don't really give a shit. You know, you're just going to do what you're going to do. But in a movie, you have to watch this thing. The story is really so key to this. And I don't understand it.
People are telling me this is the year. This is the year, man, for these video game movies, though.
Not this one. This looks terrible. Warcraft looks fucking terrible. I mean, I'll totally watch both of them at home and probably enjoy them a little bit.
Yeah.
But
well, these are going to turn into be like,
you said this is like Aeon Flux bad, but I mean, Aeon Flux had a great storyline. It just had really kind of shitty execution, but it at least tried. It attempted to be something on a higher level. I'm not sure what the fuck this is.
Let's move and talk about Popstar, which is really a spoof of Justin Bieber's entire career, and especially his Never Stop Believing, Never Say Never film that was out from about 5 years ago. Andy Samberg, and I gotta say, I thought this trailer is extremely entertaining. I don't know if the movie will be, but this trailer got me.
Yeah, I don't know how, if you can expand this to a whole movie, and if it works, you know. I would argue that a lot of movies like this, like Borat and stuff, do get very boring in parts.
The Dictator is really what it reminds me of.
Yeah, that one as well. You know, so sometimes these don't work as well, but I'll agree with you. I mean, I like Lonely Island Boys. I like Andy Samberg. I think the music is going to be funny.
Oh, yeah. They did. They debuted Fuck You Like the Military Fucked Bin Laden. Did you see that yet? That's going viral.
No, I haven't. I'll have to watch it.
Saturday Night Live. That's all over YouTube. Okay. And it's actually not a bad song.
That's the thing about this is all these songs are very good. I mean, even the stupid little short, like a Boss and shit. Like, I fucking love that song because it's just, it's silly and ridiculous, but in the same way, it's kind of fucking badass. It's just, it's weird. So it's very, there's talent here.
Yeah.
I think we can both agree on that. But like you say, I don't know. Does it expand well? I don't know.
Surprised something like this can get a full release. Could get a nationwide summer prime.
He's doing
release.
So well, though, Andy Samberg, right now. So I don't know. Is it that? I mean, there's not a lot. You already said bad year for comedy, you know. And really, when you look at what's available, there's not a lot of like straight comedy.
I mean, there have been some real duds. I mean, look at Meet the Blacks with Mike Epps, 50 Shades of Black with Marlon Wayans. I mean, there's been some
serious
duds.
Those have all been
early
stuff. But yeah, I mean, this is dead fucking damn near. This is like June, right? This is like.
Yeah, this is a primetime summer.
This is a real release. But Andy Samberg's really big right now. He's doing really well on Fox and on TV anyway. So
I still don't watch that show. Do you watch Brooklyn?
Really? I do like it, yeah.
Yeah. I don't watch it. I should watch it. I probably would like it. I like all the guys in it, but I shouldn't watch it. Strange.
Yeah, Terry Crews. If you got Terry Crews in your show, I'll watch it for sure.
Now let's talk about The Accountant, which is Ben Affleck's return to really serious dramatic films. And this is another trailer that I like a whole lot.
I don't know if I liked it a lot. I don't know how I feel about this. I mean, it's autistic Batman, right?
It really, when you text me after the other night,
isn't that so weird?
What the fuck is he doing here? His father's going to get him out there to fight these boys? It's like, what is that? Come on, Bruce,
it's
you got to
so
learn.
Weird. Yeah, but he's clearly like autistic, right? Or something along those lines.
High functioning to some level.
Yeah, but he still works. You know, he's still capable of doing things. It's kind of like, it reminds me of a more action-oriented Dexter type idea, right?
I'm watching this trailer, though, and I'm thinking, was Robert Downey Jr. too busy to come back and do this? I mean, this is a Robert Downey Jr. role if I've ever seen one, honestly.
Is it? I don't know. I don't think it is, because he wouldn't be able to act like an... I mean, this is going to be a very introverted role. If you see Ben Affleck in this, he's just... his face is blank the whole movie. I don't think this is a Robert Downey Jr. role at all.
I felt like they could have had him doing this. But the whole style of this is so Warner Brothers, if you know what I mean by that.
Oh,
you know,
yes,
like the
it
judge
is.
And whatnot. And
yeah.
That whole, I'm looking at the trailer, like, God, this is a classic Warner Brothers movie and release and trailer. And I like
but
that
this
it's done
is what
by Gavin O'Connor.
Good.
I'm a big fan of O'Connor. I like Pride and Glory. Mm-hmm. I like Warrior a whole lot. And I want to see this.
Yeah, I'm
I just don't know what that childhood shit has to do with.
I don't know what. Well, I don't know what the movie is really has to do with anything, man.
I like that politically.
It's a
intrigue,
weird
though.
Movie.
I like that. I
this
like
is gonna be weird.
It's fine with me. If he's a fucking, I don't know if he's a sniper on top of a tower at the end or what, but I like what's going on here in this trailer. I like all the little elements they're doing here.
Well, they haven't, to be fair, given you the story, as you say, you know, we don't really know how this progresses, what this turns out to be. But this is, like I say, it's a Dexter type thing. It is a superhero movie, basically, right? Is it not?
As long as he doesn't do the superhero landing, right? I didn't see him.
Yeah, do he's not going to do that. This is more grounded in reality than that. But yeah, but weird.
Jumps off the roof
movie.
And lands like that. What about this Billy Lynn's long halftime walk, which is really Ang Lee's return to not only 3D, but using that hyper frame rate. And you can see a little bit of it in this trailer.
This is in 3D?
Yeah, and this supposedly this is like visionary.
Is he gonna switch?
There's our fact checker right there, keeping me honest. It is in 3D, and it's apparently though in the high frame rate, which is gonna make it look pristine. And some of those shots you can tell are really gonna pop if that's the case with the Super Bowl and things like that. I just don't understand what the fuck this movie has. Watching this trailer, I was reminded of the last sequence or the midway sequence of Flags of Our Father when they trotted the boys around on kind of a victory tour. They didn't feel like they deserved it, and it got extremely melodramatic. And this trailer feels a bit on the nose. Am I wrong?
I like that about it, though.
Did you?
I think that it's going to do exactly – I mean, this trailer puts it clearly of what this is going to be, you know. And this is kind of something that Ang Lee, you know, does well. Let's be honest. You say on the nose and stuff, and it's emotionally on the nose as well. Like, it's very obvious what's happening here.
Maybe the trailer,
but it still works. I thought it still worked.
Like the moments in it, you know.
Yeah, and I think that's going to be what the movie's about. You know, really, to be honest with you, I'm a lot of stuff like this about war, and you know, the title alone, Billy Lynn's Long Halftime Walk, right? The whole idea of this is on the nose, right?
Yeah, I mean, that's a mouthful.
I mean, up to the very last portion where she asks him what really happened over there, right? That last bit
blankly.
Is like,
yeah.
Okay, got it, you know. But I like that about this. I like that I know exactly what I'm going to get out of this. And emotionally, I think that it works, so.
It will be a tearjerker, that's for sure, for audiences that are willing to go with it. You can see that about it right from the jump. Classic November release, right?
Like yeah.
Fall
very wanting to get all the accolades they can.
Yeah right in that award season timing. All right, and then we jump from that and talk about The Do-Over, Adam Sandler's second Netflix comedy release,
which is definitely looking at all the awards, right?
And yeah, for Razzies. This is really an action comedy, the most action comedy thing I've seen him do really since Bulletproof. And
he's got a gun in this even at one point.
I'm excited about this one. I thought this trailer was entertaining,
you know,
as all shit, man.
I'm still a little confused. Yeah, I mean, I love the idea that we're doing an action comedy. I love the idea that David Spade is in it. Because
yeah.
Where did that come from? Adam Sandler, of course. And this feels like a very Happy Madison Adam Sandler movie that they've been holding on to since, 1998.
I'm fine with that, though.
Me
I really
too.
Am. I love when he says, you know, I tied you to the bed because I didn't want you to wake up and be scared. Why did you think I wasn't scared? Yeah. Woke up tied to the bed, you know, like that kind of stuff. And even like the, you know, we all have a friend that takes shit too far. That's all so. It just feels like vintage Sandler to me. They just look older, you know. It's like the Lost Sandler movie to me. which is what I wanted the Ridiculous Six to be, and which that was nowhere near. I'm a huge Sandler fan. I sat through Blended in a theater. I cannot get through the Ridiculous Six.
Yeah,
I
didn't.
I cannot do it.
It looks, the trailers look terrible. This at least looks like a real movie, and more in line with something that he would do.
This looks like a real movie.
I like Adam Sandler comedies, you know.
So do I, and I'm all ready for this one. And they said that Netflix said that their users, their viewership is actually highest over Memorial Day weekend, is what their data has suggested, which is why they're releasing this May 27th. So this will be available.
That's probably true. I mean, I will watch this the minute it comes out. I basically watch everything Adam Sandler, except the only thing I haven't seen is Ridiculous Six.
You saw Blended?
I've seen Blended.
I saw Jack and Jill.
I know it's terrible.
Theater,
it's dog shit. Fun. I've seen Jack and Jill. It's also not so good.
I'm hoping this is going to be raunchy and just kind of irreverent on the level of That's My Boy. Something that's just kind of a one-off that really isn't even for mass consumption.
Is it? Does he get? I mean, doing this deal with Netflix and then putting out a movie like The Do-Over, clearly this. I mean, let's be honest. This is not theater. This is not a theatrical run ready.
But it's also not straight to DVD. It's in that weird middle.
Is it not? It's exactly straight to DVD. It's so weird that it's coming out essentially straight to DVD. I mean, you can say straight to streaming all you want. Same thing. But does that – is he going to get a little bit leeway because of that, do you think? You feel like that at all? Like maybe
I'm giving him a little bit of leeway for it because this isn't a real movie. But he's not straight to DVD in the sense that it's some Seagal shit where he's not doing ADR and they're shooting in Romania and factories and body doubles are there because he's barely on set. That's what I consider those straight to DVD type things that are
okay. This has money. I'll admit that.
You know, this looks like it has some sort of quality to it, whether it's a look or whatever.
Backing.
Yeah. And with that, so you can attract even cameos that'll work, you know, because a lot of his movies are based on cameos and people popping up.
He's so lucky in the sense that he has – it's him, right? I mean, you talk about cameos. We got Sean Austin in this, Luis Guzman, obviously, Nick Swordsman.
Nick Swordsman, yeah.
I mean, the list goes on and on because he is Adam Sandler and he's got his crew with him and stuff.
Got a repertoire,
You know, I mean, outside of Adam Sandler movies, I mean, Sean Austin, what? He's a hobbit? I mean
– no, he's a fucking Goonie. Forever, man.
Goonies, hey, Goonies forever.
Fastball out there. I'm gonna hit it. All right.
You know what? Goonies are good enough. So.
Exactly. All right. Let's talk about Don't Breathe, the horror film, the new horror film coming out from executive producer Sam Raimi, directed by the guy who did the Evil Dead reinterpretation a couple years back. You had me watch this trailer, and I was I was reminded right off the bat of the old, you know, turn the tables on what we think is the bad guys thing that Wes Craven did in The People Under the Stairs. That's really what this kind of reminded me of. You know, you think you're on top of it and you get yourself into the situation you didn't need to be in with the force you don't understand.
How is this feature length?
The trailer bored me, so I can't imagine the whole movie being any good.
Well, at first I thought, oh shit, oh, this is crazy. And then after a while, you're like, just fucking do something. Like, fight him. I don't get – what's going on?
You got time to call your dad and say you fucked up?
You know, can't you just leave? Can't you just run away? I don't understand. Why are you
– why have you
– how is there a situation in which you find yourself like this where he's just walking around and leaving the rooms and doing this, but you don't move. You don't leave. I don't know. And the idea that he's – what is he, like a superhero? I don't understand. There's two people here. You can fucking kill this guy. No problem. I'm lost as to
this
why.
This is a
as
very
how
bad
this expands.
Episode to me.
It may be. I mean, as a short film, I think this would be absolutely ingenious. As a feature film, this is going to be boring as fuck.
Yeah,
the whole movie, I'm just going to be thinking, fucking kill him.
Well, I mean, if you don't have a good, even if you have a good hook, you know, let's start like that. Even The Conjuring and things like that, and some of these movies. I especially think Deliver Us from Evil was slept on. You didn't even see that, and you're a horror guy. Eric Bana and Joel McHale from a couple of years ago. That was a very, very good movie, horror film. And even if you have a good hook in the horror genre, sometimes the execution is so bland, or the trailers are cut so generically that it doesn't sell what you're trying to get through. So
that depends on the people watching as well. I mean, horror is a very weird genre. You know, I really liked It Follows. I thought that had a really good hook.
I still
got and a really good execution, but a lot of people didn't. So, you know, it's kind of like, you know, comedy in that sense that some people think things are funny. Some people think things are scary. Some people, I mean, I really don't think things are scary necessarily in the sense that I get scared of like the boogeyman or anything, you know, but I do get in the moment of things where you're worried that, you know, is someone going to get killed or something? You know, I like to be in, to try to get into that moment.
Well, with our filmmaking background, you understand too what they're doing technically to pull yourself out of the moment. So if you're in the moment, you know it's working because it's got you even for that millisecond.
Yeah, you know, yeah. And that's really the hard thing to do with horror films. I mean, you can make a fun horror movie, but that doesn't mean it's necessarily a good horror movie. And this feels reaching. I mean, I really thought that the remake of The Evil Dead was a bit of a reach as well.
I thought it was slightly effective at times.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with that. But it was still, overall, as a movie, it was, you know, you need to make up your mind as to what you're doing. You can't be everything to all people, you know. Like, the original Evil Dead is fun. That's what it is. It's fun. So when you remake that and you try to make it serious, I don't know, it doesn't really work. And so this has that same feel to me where it's like, it's a fun idea. Oh, this is a fun idea, but then it's too serious. And so... it gets boring.
The trailer bored me. The trailer that didn't bore me, though, was Hell or High Water, this little
sleeper action hit.
Yeah, really, it's kind of a revenge action drama that's going on here with Chris Pine, Ben Foster, and Jeff Bridges.
Jeff Bridges, yeah.
And this looks like something that John Sayles would have done, you know, like a Lone Star or something like that.
Where did this come from?
I don't know, but this has got, it looks like it has extremely powerful performances, a great hook, a great idea.
Very Western-y, you know, bank robbers. These guys are trying to pay off their mortgage, and they go around apparently like several times, right? This isn't just a one-time thing, but they go around and they continually hit these banks every so often to try to pay off the mortgage on this ranch. And it's a very Western-y feel. Jeff Bridges plays the cop that's, or the sheriff, whatever the hell he is, out to find these guys, Ben Foster and Chris Pine, who I guess are brothers, right?
Well, that's the one their parents thing ranch. Is that Ben Foster is the older brother. Get the fuck out of here. Get out of here, Ben Foster. You'll always be that little boy to me.
Anyhow.
Annie. Anakin.
I do really like Ben Foster. I do really like Chris Pine. I like Jeff Bridges, and they all seem to be on their A game in this, and
they're firing on
the direction is really good, and the movie seems interesting. And I don't know, for such a basic storyline, I do like the idea of this.
By these kind of trailers, I got tricked like by The Rover, which had a good trailer like this. I got tricked by Z for Zachariah, which was on the fence on that one, which had a trailer, even had Chris Pine in it, and your boy Clifton. Yeah. Chewy Elijah.
Gotcha. I'm well aware of that.
So, I mean, I just didn't think that I watched this and I thought, man, are they going to get me again? Am I going to watch this?
Maybe.
Shit.
I loved
this trailer did work.
But there are moments, right? I mean, I love Chris Pine telling his kids, right?
Like, yeah, everything people, you hear about me is true.
You're going to hear a lot of bad things about your dad, but everything you hear, like, and the kid's like, what, like, don't believe it?
I don't believe
like,
him.
No.
Yeah.
Everything you hear is true. Like, that, those kind of moments and shit. It's like, damn, this is going to be like, this is either going to be a movie that doesn't handle the timeline very well, or it's going to be one that handles it expertly, you know? And so that's what I'm waiting to see. Because as you say, you know, trailers can lie.
Which they do often. That should be our next website, trailerscanlie.com. This looks like something like a good movie that John Sayles or Walter Hill never got around to making at this point. I love noir westerns too, you know? Just in there, just fucking basically
making
modern Western.
Day westerns are cool, you know. I don't think we get enough of those,
and they always seem to still work. All those kind of genre conventions still
because
work.
They're tough guys, right? I mean, that's what essentially the Western is a tough guy, right? It's the one thing that we don't necessarily get anymore. I mean, we do a little bit with the superheroes and stuff, but not enough.
Well, there's no vulnerability there, there's only just you gotta see invincible. But brought down by morals and ethics. And
right, exactly. But that's what I mean. But that's the same thing with this, right? Hell or High Water. These guys are capable of going and robbing all these banks over and over again. No one can catch them. And in the end, it does seem like the conscience is weighing on them.
Well, it's an interesting show tonight because we basically had better trailers than we did movies that we saw. Out of all the movies that you and I combined to see, I think the only positive, you liked Pride and Prejudice and Zombies and The Night Before.
Yeah.
And our trailers were a little bit more successful here. So, interesting night. I guess this is how the 300s are going to be.
Oh, moving forward. I don't know. Well, we'll see the big movies this year. I think are going to be good. I didn't even talk about Civil War. I'll talk about it next time.
Oh, yes. Yeah, don't shoot in at the end here.
We're already in over the hour. We're good at this point. I'll talk about Civil War next time. You know, suffice it to say, it's fucking amazing. But
I've heard that universally. I plan on checking it out this week so I can join
already
in the
over a billion worldwide. You know, it's a great
that,
movie
because that means everything. Because Alice in Wonderland was the
you know
best
what Alice in Wonderland is one of my favorite movies of all time. I await the sequel. Johnny Depp is the greatest actor ever.
I got to share something with
it's
you
not
that
true.
I saw on Adult Swim the other night. You know, okay. I still watch that. You know how they have those little written blurbs in between the commercials and whatnot?
There's adults like in it.
Irreverent.
Yes.
And it said that Ferris Bueller is turning 30 years old this year, that the movie is 30 years old this summer. And it said, if that doesn't mean anything to you, your beautiful snowflake in the future is yours. And it said, if that puts a lump in your throat, start checking your body for lumps and put a pin in your dreams. And I thought, oh, shit, man, it's true, huh?
Wow.
Good God.
How is that? I mean, okay, Ferris Bueller, the movie is turning 30
movie.
Years old.
Yeah. He's in his 60s, but yeah.
Ferris I was going to say, old. Wait.
Yeah. Ferris Bueller's got to be his fucking
the character
60s.
Itself, himself is old, would have to be, you know, twice that, right? No.
Yeah. I'd probably say in his 50s.
30, 45, 40, yeah, almost 50. Yeah, 50, right? About, you'd say. How
Silver
old was
Fox.
He in that movie? 15, 16, 17?
No, I think he was 18. Wasn't he a senior?
Was he 18? Yeah, he was a senior. So he's 17 or 18.
Yeah.
So yeah, I'd make him in his 50s. Okay.
48.
Matthew Broderick's clearly older than that.
Fuck yeah, I think he's damn near 70. Little horse face.
Holy shit.
Leave it on that little jab at Sarah Jessica Parker. This is a stepping jab.
Yeah, you can see a gal about a horse.
Oh, wow. I saw that movie. It was called How Does She Do It All? I don't know how she does it or whatever that was.
How Does She Do It All?
Remember that one? How Does She Do It All? She doesn't. She's
how Does
terrible.
She Do Them All? That's a different movie.
That's a Kim Cattrall's movie. All right, thank you guys for joining us on episode 301. We want to thank you guys for continuing to stick with us throughout the years and all through these podcasts. You can get our entire catalog over at iTunes or on moviemavericks.com. If you're listening on Stitcher, TalkShoe, iTunes, wherever you may be listening through, we want to thank you guys. Continue to check moviemavericks.com for updates. We'll be back with you next week with a new podcast. Speaking for Trevor Anderson, I'm Jason Rugard, and we are the Movie Mavericks.
Oh my, another magnificent episode has come to an end. If you're craving more, set your destination to moviemavericks.com, warp 9. Engage!